woman on the 13th snow. You want to strut right up to the devil's door and knock hard, but don't ring no bell. The devil's got a head like a dance floor minefield. If you're gonna do the tango, better do well. Well, if you want to please everybody, if you want to please everybody, if you want to please everybody, you're gonna need the devil. If you wanna please everybody, if you wanna please everybody, if you wanna please everybody, you're gonna need the devil. Ideas growing in your little head. You want to show everybody that you meant what you said. Well, sing it loud, but don't steal no tunes. The devil's got an ear like a pitchfork, tuning for tapping for, believe you, life and rules. If you want to please everybody, if you want to please everybody, if you want to please everybody, you're gonna need the devil. If you want to please everybody, if you want to please everybody, if you want to please everybody, you're gonna need the devil. All right, now. Some kind of revenge. You know some bad folks you used to call friends. Well, think it hard, but don't take no advice. The devil's like a doctor with a big bad fee. If you're gonna ask a baby, you got to ask nice. If you want something in your hairpin, the devil's self may be heaven sent. Negotiate, but hang on to your soul, and don't let the devil get on no roll. If you want a bad miracle, if you want a miracle bad, if you want to be happy and sad, you're gonna need the devil. 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 You're gonna need the devil.
Okay, this is Ink Studs on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm sitting at a desk in the Fantagraphics office next to the lovely, most incredible house next door. I'm with Jacob Covey. Is it Covey? Did I get it right this time?
Yeah.
I got it right this time.
Yeah.
Give me a high five for that one. There we go.
Bonus points.
All right. So it's my little quick day trip down Seattle. Luckily, you took time out of your insane day to sit down with me. I feel really bad. You're a dad. You've got books to do.
There's a lot going on.
There's a party tonight.
But you're Robin McConnell.
Listened to by 20, enjoyed by 3.
Enjoyed by 3.
That's Dad, Mom, and Cousin Ralph.
Yeah, tell them hi for me. Yeah.
I'd be really happy to hear from you. Last time I had you on was, I guess, 2 years ago, right?
God.
Yeah, and both of us...
Did you delete that from your website, I think?
No,
I would find it, which I'm glad.
It's up there. I think it got unlinked somehow.
Oh, okay.
I should double check. When I move sites, there's a lot of... I need to do some work on the site. I've actually fulfilled my capacity.
Oh, okay.
Like, I have 5 gigs I need to bring everything down in size. So if you're wanting good quality Ink Studs, download them now, because they're all going to be crappy quality. In sound quality, I mean.
No, all your interviews are crappy.
I'm not going to argue.
Sorry. I couldn't resist.
Oh, now, it's funny, because when we talked before, I was still pretty new to doing the show, and you're pretty new in your gig, too, here.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
I guess the Beast book was it was for the first Beast book, and you've been here a couple of years now with Fantagraphics?
Yeah, you know, I've been here actually over 4 years now.
Well, that would make sense then.
So, yeah, like that. Which has been really great. So, now at this point, it's like we have a real kind of a solid art department that's been at this for a few years. Because Adam was interning when I started. Adam Grano, the other designer here. So I feel like we have a good solid department, and we have a great intern right now, Alexa. And so yeah,
awesome. So things are the books are getting prettier and prettier, and
hopefully a little. But yeah, no, it's been a really good time lately, and of course the Beast Project is sort of my
it's a life of its own,
my self-indulgent project. So,
this is what you guys get to do for me since I'm here.
What's that?
Is what Fantagraphics does for you since you do all that for me.
Well, yes and no. I mean, you know, nobody's getting any money.
No.
I do it all on my own time and all that, but then all the production, you know, all the money that would be paid to artists goes into the production.
Mm-hmm.
So it works out really nicely. We get this extravagant little package.
But it's done quite well. It's like, it's not... Because the first book, it sold out of first hardcover printing, sold out of second hardcover printing, and now it's got the wonderful Jordan Crane softcover edition.
Yeah, beautiful Jordan Crane fold out on the cover.
Massive.
Yeah, 24 inches of Jordan Crane.
Ladies, hold it while it's hot. Not the Eros edition.
Yeah, we're... Never mind, yeah, exactly.
We'll still stick away from that.
So yeah, and then the new Beast 2 sold out before we got it. You know, sold out, in this case, means placed. Like, it's in stores or
it's
whatever.
To the whole.
So yeah, we're out of it, more or less.
Really?
Yeah.
It just came out.
I know. It was bad. Nobody's fault, but some bad numbers were given for predicting how many would be bought. Some of us might have argued with that number, but, you know, it's not my money. So it sold out, but we have a second edition already planned.
It adds to the hype.
Well, I do have to say the first one will be, or the second edition will not have the silver page ends, so, you know,
I'll have to get out my silver Sharpie.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Black Market Beast 2 First Edition. That's you huffing.
Yeah, we'll just clarify that. So, the first one was a pretty... I want to find the right phrase. It was an intense task. Why the second one? Why submit yourself to such punishment?
You know, honest to God, this is, like, so much work. And, you know, it's not... the size of a 1930s Sunday tabloid, so nobody's going to pay attention to it. That's my Kramer's thing. No, I didn't mean that in a negative way.
We don't have Matt Groening in it.
I don't have Matt Groening, so no. It's a huge chore, and it's like I remember thinking it doesn't. You know, that sounded like I was totally making a Kramer's dig. I didn't mean it that way.
So you know, it's
say
okay.
Things totally inappropriate.
You know what? They've gotten lots of love, so I don't mind giving them a couple little digs.
Yeah, well, it's not a dig. Okay. So anyway.
They can deal with it.
I don't recommend anybody try to do an anthology with 90 artists. It's so much work, and I became a dad and all that. I don't know why I did the second one, but... It was, I had to force myself to put in print in the second book that there will be no third book, because I don't want to be tempted to try and do it again. Because I love the book. I love the book so much. The book means so much to me. What the artists have done for it, it's so meaningful to me. But I do have to make sure I don't try to do another one.
Now, what's the experience working with the artists different from the second one to the first one, because now that the first one's out, people kind of have an idea going, okay, this is what you had in mind.
Yeah.
And it's not the same people as well.
Right. It's all new people, and actually it's not like the book is so well known. Just, you know, I mean, you know, it did pretty well, and that's great. So a lot of the artists didn't have a clue what it was. These aren't, like, all comics people, and actually, I don't think there's really that many comics people in the second one. Well, I guess there is, but you know, yeah, some people probably had some preconceptions about it, but it's still exciting to see. What I do is I give them a list of a couple hundred creatures that I've found in research, and then the artists get to choose something that sounds appealing to them. And so in that way, it's really interesting to see what artists are drawn to, you know, what speaks to them in all of these kind of dark symbols. I think of it as mostly symbolism.
The beasts in themselves are kind of, they take a role in those cultures of being kind of people's fears and in a lot of aspects. And
yeah.
Kind of representing
yeah,
troubled times.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, for some reason, in the first book, there's a creature, I'm drawing a blank on the name of the creature at the moment, but it always sticks with me because it was the first one that I really got, that I understood, like, that there was a purpose behind the story of this creature. And the creature was, it's not the Nuklebee. Anyway, it comes in the night, and it, like, basically sneaks up on pregnant women who are sleeping, sucks out their baby, and replaces it with sticks and debris made in the shape of a baby. And it sounds just bizarre, but when I really, really thought about it, I'm realizing that there's a way that people have to make some sort of sense out of a miscarriage.
Yeah.
You know, in a pre-scientific age and whatnot. And in trying to make sense out of a miscarriage, you know, what could it be? What can it be? And this
Why
idea
would this
that,
happen to someone?
Yeah. There has to be, you have to tell yourself stories. And there's nothing wrong with that, which is another thing that I'm becoming. Well, anyway. But there has to be stories to explain this. And so it just sort of makes sense, and it's kind of beautiful and poetic the way people explain these things. And, you know, this miscarried baby is not your baby. It's the hope of your baby, and it's now
just debris.
And it's
not your fault.
And it's not your fault. So there's just these beautiful stories when you really sit down and look at them. You know, when I started this off, I didn't know why I wanted to do the book. I thought, well, it's monsters, and everybody likes monsters. I'm really intrigued by this. You know, so, you know, you find a bunch of people who like to draw crazy creatures and all that, and you make a book. And, it's just been really interesting to kind of go further into it with the Jungian side and whatnot.
Now, with the second book, is it still kind of people who like to draw monsters? Or are you kind of going, do you have anywhere you're like, this is what this person would normally do? But I'd be fascinated to see what they would do with that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, you know, Thomas Allen, the photographer, he's just amazing. He has this book out of his work called Uncovered. He's a big New York guy. And super nice. He was so approachable. He has a print in the Beast Show tonight, and it's $2,000 for this print. You know? And it's like, he's in totally this other league, but he was so game to do this. And he did this deer woman. And,
I remember looking at this being amazed by it. This, like, cut up cards and. Yeah, it's.
Yeah, he does collage work. Most of what he does is with pulp book covers. And it's hard to explain it, but he cuts out these shapes, you know, human figures in the pulp covers, but leaves them connected to the books and folds them out in various ways. And anyway, just beautiful diorama-like, collage-like, whatever. I've never seen him do any kind of creatures. It was, you know, and so it was really exciting to see what he might do with that. And it's devastating. It's beautiful.
It's interesting to have that balance with someone like that who isn't even, like, in that whole juxtaposed world, like that's someone who's not even like that, and I really appreciate that, because one thing I kind of get frustrated with is you kind of have comics, and then, well, you know, there's a lowbrow art that's connected with, and don't even get me fucking started on lowbrow as a term. Here, let's just call our stuff shit, and then, you know.
Yeah.
I'll stop.
What do you mean
there?
To shit art?
Yeah, and, you know, lowbrow is a terrible term. So it's nice to see that it's not part of that genre, and it's to bring in kind of different aspects.
Yeah, yeah.
So for yourself, are you pretty voracious kind of intaker of art for, say, like, looking, or did you kind of, with this second book, go and hunt down and kind of see what else is out there?
Well, you know, like, I like to flip through Juxtapose or something like that, but I don't know. I find a lot of the art that's out there kind of meaningless, or it's about the form. And I don't have a problem with that. I mean, some of the artists in these books, definitely, they have form as their focus. But I think I'm trying to learn about art, why I react to it, Everybody here is like comics people. I mean, like everybody in this office is, you know, they are immersed in comics, love comics. It's all about that. I'm not that. It's kind of awkward because I work in an industry where everybody's obsessed with this comics form. And for me, I'm very interested in comics. I love comics, but I don't read every comic that comes out or that I can get my hands on. And, I'm interested in art. I'm interested in just the response that I seem to only get from art, whatever kind that is. So,
DC Comics isn't a context that they play as an art form with itself necessarily as the storytelling.
Yeah,
capacity.
I do think that's true. Yeah, I guess so. I think that I don't tend, like, I'm not that into just story-driven comics that much. This is kind of a hard conversation because I'd really have to start making all kinds of qualifications, but you know, I love silent comics
like Jason's
silent stuff, which he doesn't actually do that much these days, but when I first saw Jason's book, that just blew me away. That changed like everything that I felt about comics, which kind of dates how, you know, like how recently I really started to connect with it. It's just, before that I liked comics here and there, and, you know, like Klaus is amazing, and the Hernandez brothers, amazing, but it's stuff like where I read that and I just love that it's this universal language, and you know, I don't know, I respond to that kind of thing.
Well, the use of silent story, it's a strength in itself, because a lot of cartoons will use that, like, dialogue and descriptive as kind of a crutch to...
Yeah.
And I've seen some stuff that would just blow your mind about how overblown with descriptions and stuff it is, what it's like. You could just pull all that out.
Right.
And still be able to tell a story. And I think, like, another good example of that was a couple of moments ago, Al Columbia's story of the... Uh-huh. I forget the name of it. It was just, like, in an apartment. And
yeah.
It just kind of slowly unveiled itself and got more and more.
Yeah, that just has... Yeah, and see, that's a good example where that one wasn't even necessarily... Like, is more of a... there's a narrative that... From panel to panel, how do you say that? Anyway, but yeah, the
it's
Columbia
sequential
piece,
narrative?
The Columbia piece, there was a narrative there, but it was like, it was more like
each piece was individual, but
yeah,
it worked together as a whole.
Yeah, exactly. I guess so. But yeah, I mean, I love that stuff. Nicholas Mahler. Oh my God, I love Nicholas Mahler, and I don't know why he's not more popular, but he's another great silent comic artist, or is he? Calls it in an email just the other day, I guess, mute comics.
So, I don't like that.
Yeah, it's kind of a nice term.
Silent comics.
I think I've seen
like
that before.
Yeah,
but mute
Frenchmen.
Yeah,
they have a way.
Yeah, they do.
Now, one of the more fascinating pieces in Beast Book 2 is actually kind of the opposite end of that spectrum. Dan Zetlock's piece.
Yeah.
We were talking about that before I turned on the mic. It's amazing.
He did a four-page comic for Beast 2. It's the only comic, you know, as it were, that's in the book, or either book, unless you count Stephen Weissman's as sort of a comic for a one-page comic in the first book.
But and Beethoven's.
Oh, that's book. True, that's true, yeah.
The Slug.
Gilbert's, God, yeah, I love that. I love that. I'm so grateful to Gilbert Hernandez for letting me use an excerpt from his Love and Rockets in that first book. It sets the tone great. But yeah, I digress. The the Dan Zetlock thing is another one of those artists where it's like, he does great comics, but specifically these like one page illustration type things he does, and that I don't know. I'm trying to think. Does he normally, his piece for Beast 2 is sort of like a hybrid of his usual comics and
where he kind of
one panel
shows the insides.
Yeah, like the dissections and what do you call it? Anyway.
Yeah. Cutaways.
Yeah. He does this fascinating pseudo nonfiction presentation of the giant squid or the kraken. He's somebody I just do not understand why somebody hasn't tapped him for like a major magazine or something, you know, to just do these illustrations in a more commercial presence.
Did you read the comic art where he did the different stages of image reproduction?
I don't remember.
I think it's the most recent comic art where he has about 7 pages interspersed of this guy reprinting thing like pamphlets for his church.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
With the different like photostat.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't even know how to talk about his work. I get caught up in trying to. This is the thing about art that I don't know how to talk about. I don't know how you talk about what it does, but what he does shouldn't work so well on an emotional level, like because it's so kind of clinical, but it's so
it's
heartfelt.
Like a manual.
Yeah, it's so heartfelt and analytical, and yet filled with sort of asides and humor, and you know it's tongue in cheek, but it's really not. You know, I don't know. He's doing amazing stuff, and I'm really curious because Richard Ellis. I interviewed Richard Ellis for Beast 2, and I was really stoked. I was so excited to interview Richard Ellis. He wrote this book, In Search of the Giant Squid. Wait, do I have that right? I always get that mixed up with an exhibit I went to. Anyway, he's like the world's leading expert on the giant squid, pretty much.
Yeah.
And he's also like a celebrated marine artist. What do you got? Anyway, marine illustrator. You know, like one of the leading guys in scientific marine illustration.
Like someone Jacques Cousteau would have alongside him.
Exactly. And I was so excited. And I wanted to talk about the Kraken and about like what that meant to him, why he thought people always reported this. And he just like tore apart all of my fascination with the squid. Like, he seemed like kind of the grumpy professor, and I was the freshman, you know, college student who thought he knew it all or something. I don't know what, but it was so hard. Like, I had to end up editing a little bit of the interview for the book just because it, like, totally sort of threw off the tone of the book. But I'd really love to see what he thinks of the bizarre Dan Zetlock piece that comes right before his interview. It's, probably not what he's expecting. But he was really sweet. He knew the book. I mean, like, he was a nice guy, but for some reason when he answered the questions, I felt like I was being sort of chided a little bit. But maybe he didn't mean it that way. I don't know.
Maybe he's just old and grumpy.
Maybe he's just old and grumpy.
It happens, huh? Had a couple of those.
Cheer up, Ellis! We'll be right back.
Now, a couple other fascinating comics ones you got in there, a really interesting one is the Craig Thompson one.
Yeah.
Which seems a bit of a departure for his regular.
Yeah, I guess so, huh? Yeah, it's a lot, it's very charming, funny, sort of in that vein of Dan's that walking away. sort of cutaway. It's more like a 1950s ad for the Boo Hag. But yeah, and that was, he was another guy who was really nice to even make time to do it, because I know he's been really focused on his Habibi,
the epic.
So I'm very grateful to Craig for doing that. It's a great piece.
Tell me about some of the other, this one's fantastic. Laura Plansker?
Yeah, Laura Plansker. Yeah, the first book I specifically used all illustrators and, you know, painters, that kind of thing. And in this book I decided that I was going to ask some photographers, and Laura Plansker is a photographer, and she does kind of diorama type stuff, sets up these, they look sort of like those Viewmaster slides, you know, mm-hmm. from
the kind of mild focus in parts.
Yeah, like there's the depth of field is really used. So it's like little macro toy photography, sort of. But yeah, she does really great work. And that's this weird Japanese creature that poses. Well, okay, I shouldn't say. I don't know how this works. I forget exactly. But the woman is basically, she's got a head in the back of her, I mean, a mouth in the back of her head. And this woman is very meek, mild-mannered, and you never see her eating. But then at night or whatever, she her hair opens up and this mouth in the back of her head starts, you know, that's how she gets her nourishment. It eats for her. It's kind of a, well, I guess, yeah, I could analyze that too, I suppose.
It all could be analyzed, and that's a fascinating thing, is you can kind of, you get one aspect, which is the description, the technical, and then you can see within what the artist kind of took out of that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and then the writers come in afterwards, after we get the art, so that when they write the description, there's not a bunch of sort of weird details that contradict the art, because we did have to tailor the text, like leave out maybe that the thing is a bright yellow beast if for some reason the artist just chose not to depict it as bright yellow or, you know, whatever. But yeah, so there's a little bit of tailoring there, but yeah, it's interesting to see how people choose to depict the piece. I think the one that stands out the most for me in that way is from the first book, Esther Pearl Watson. Like, the beast is depicted, but in this really sort of vague way, where it's like just a tiny part of the illustration, but the symbols of the creature are all over the picture. And anyway, it's really interesting to see how different people do that.
One person that you have been kind of championed is John Vermilia.
Yeah, that's true. I think John Vermilia is genius. I think he is a brilliant, brilliant kid. He's young.
You want to steal him from Picturebox?
Yeah. Fuck you, Picturebox.
Take it, Dan.
Yeah, I think Dan could take me pretty easily, actually.
Don't mess with New Yorkers.
No. I know he could take me, but no, he's smart to have Vermilia over there. That kid's talented, and I love his He-Man screen prints. I just think they were a brilliant pop culture reference point for some classic myth stuff. He told the 13 trials of He-Man in these screen print depictions.
Oh, wow.
I would love to reprint those in a book somehow someday. And it turns out another person that I totally love is Liz Hickey, and I didn't know that. I'm pretty sure I found her work totally separate from any connection to John, and it turns out they're like pals, and I think they even dated, and so there's something in the water over there. But yeah, Liz Hickey is another great one.
Now, you're talking about the silk screen print, and the prints are going to be at the shop, I'm saying tonight, but this probably won't be on for several weeks.
Yeah. Several weeks ago, we had a show at the Fantagraphics Gallery.
Hopefully, it was a rocking good time.
Hopefully. I guess I can't even remember. It was such a good time, I don't even remember how it went.
I think Jim Blanchard sent me a roofie.
Sounds like Jim.
Now, prints, you have a specific viewpoint on the prints. Usage of prints, which I completely agree with and actually kind of stopped me from buying some stuff at one point, because I was like, you know what? It's the hand involvement.
Yeah, and I wrestle with this a little bit, and I recently posted on Fantagraphics my assertive side about how I felt about the prints, and I just don't like giclée. I don't like digital prints, and I think it's bogus. I think it's a totally silly medium. I think that if you're an artist who only creates digitally, you know, so be it. That's the crutch. Go ahead. I mean, that's not the crutch. It's the crux, maybe. But anyway, you know, so be it. But I just don't think that, generally speaking, a digital print has that soul. There's something in it, and I don't expect to argue with anyone who feels otherwise, but it's not about a rational thing, although I can make rational arguments for it, but you know, it's the
one of my friends said it best, next time we used to work for the write for the journal, Chris Brayshaw, old Pulp Fiction books, best used bookstore in Vancouver, he said it best, they're just photocopies. Like, you might as well just get it. And, like, to me, it's like, I don't know, it's like, you know, in a way, it's kind of true. It's like, why am I going to spend $100 on this thing that, like, comparing that with, say, a Jordan Crane silkscreen print, where you know that guy studied each fucking layer, and using this incredible brain that no one else can even touch for knowing colors.
Well, and he built the setup. I mean, he built everything about it. He's doing this in his basement or something.
Yeah.
You know, he used to, as I understand it.
I hear he has a massive setup.
He's got a big
setup.
Press at his studio now. But, not press, but, you know, setup. I sincerely think that art, I think the story behind how art is made is relevant, and it does matter. And knowing that Jordan Crane did that, and that he did that, like, out of this absolute devotion to the print, that makes the print more valuable to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't care how passionate you are, if you're just clicking
Photoshop
save as and then print, and you're just sending it to print, I don't care how passionately you press your mouse button, it doesn't matter. It's not going to have the soul. So I wanted the Beast Print Show. Actually, there was a functionary reason for this. I had to limit the artists, and inherently I would limit the artists by making them have to make the prints themselves in like 2 months' time. So there was a good reason to do it too, but because we still ended up with 50 artists in this tiny space.
Really?
That includes the tiny showcase letterpress print series that's 10 artists, but yeah, so 40 artists and the tiny showcase. So anyway, it's awesome. Like, you know, there somebody like Tom Neely hadn't made prints, and he's like, I kind of got, I think he told me he was on the fence about giclée stuff, and so he got motivated to find a letterpress printer in town, and he got his piece, the Skinwalker, printed up, letterpress, and then he hand watercolored each one of the prints, and that's awesome. I mean, that's like, not everybody can buy an original, but that's like as much like an original as, you know, you can get. And it's great. And it feels important to have this stuff. And, like, I love having art in my life. I really get a lot from being surrounded by art. And, you know, my wife is Christian. She's a Catholic. And I grew up just kind of despising the church and all this. And it's funny because she and I got together
the same week that Gary agreed to publish Beasts, mm-hmm. she got accepted to theology school.
Oh, wow.
And it was pretty much the week that we re-met for the first time. And we had known each other for 6 years, and, you know, we didn't like each other. and I didn't understand her being Christian, and she didn't, you know, she thought I was like a, you know, just a jerk hipster or something. And we didn't like each other. And we met up and at my best friend's wedding shower. And my whole point here is that as I've, like, been with her, the books are dedicated to her because she is a phenomenal person, a brilliant mind, and she has changed my way of seeing the world. She watches films like nobody else you know. The way she watches films, just it turns my brain inside out. Like, everything is a symbol. Everything is meaningful in a weird way
mm-hmm.
that I admire her endlessly. And, so anyway, so the Beast thing has come for me. Like, she has this Catholic thing, but she's not Christian. And she's not, like, the sanctimonious Christian. She's not, you know...
Not a born-again. Which is a different... It's a different... I find... And, it, you know, there's probably people that are going to get offended by me if I say this, but you have a different kind of openness with that level of indoctrination.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And with born-agains, it's like, this is how it is, or you're going to hell. And
yeah, because it's too revelatory. It's too, like, I was in the dark, but now I can see.
Yeah, and
Whereas
I've had Mormon friends, born Mormon, and, well, we don't get along on certain issues. They were still very open about a lot of stuff, where I've found, like, born-agains would be the complete opposite, and...
Yeah, right. So. Yeah, yeah. I do think there's something about I was blind and now I can see versus, like, as you said, indoctrination. And for her, it's sort of a matter of culture, too. She recognizes that she believes this as part of her culture. But those cultural stories are important. That's mm-hmm. that's something grounding and uniting for people. She's not saying everybody has to be Catholic, but for her that works for sort of unifying her with the world. And I don't have a clue what she means when she's talking about God, and I'm trying to understand it. And she claims that the Beast book is, you know, she's really unflinching about just sort of accepting that the Beasts is my religion, as it were. You know, it's really interesting.
Art is your religion, and this is your way of practicing.
Yeah, which all sounds really fucking pretentious. and I would hate me if I were listening to me talking right now.
Do you have your pipe handy?
Hold
on a second.
So me and my Basset hound are going to sit here with my pipe and talk about this. No, I. It sounds horrible, but I really, truly just get a lot from being around art and kind of thinking about what I'm responding to. And, like, I'm a terrible artist. I'm not a terrible artist, but I can't draw and I can't paint and I can't, you know, do these technical things very well. And I don't purport in any way to be an artist. That's why I'm a graphic designer. but, like, I'm more and more okay with the sloppy job I do with my artwork, but only if I'm doing it when I'm being really honest about why I'm making something. If I start making something trying to make it look like it's supposed to or something, then I end up in a deep depression, mad at myself and all this stuff. So,
you might as well be a cartoonist then.
Well, yeah, I know, right? God. I don't know how Chris Ware does it, for example, or, you know, any of these people who know true, like, kind of self-loathing, how they can sit there and, like, meticulously draw. I guess they get lost in it in a way that I'm not able to. That's so hard.
Like, I'm sure you've seen Chris Ware originals in your time here, and it's quite fascinating to look how much work goes in to this black and white page.
Yeah.
So there's just layers and layers of pencils. You can tell these erased.
Yeah, yeah.
And just worked and worked until you had that page right.
Yeah.
And then even that half the time isn't right, because by the time he reprints it, from the one it's in, you know, he's got another change to make.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I don't envy Chris Ware's life. I think he's a genius, and that's got to be really hard. and, yeah. You know, it's funny, I was thinking about him earlier today. What was I thinking about with him? Oh, it's kind of esoteric. I don't know. I was thinking about Seth. I have no idea. I don't normally think about Seth, and I don't normally think about Seth's underwear. But this morning, I was like, for some reason, I thought about him and how people are, like, critical of the fact that he dresses...
old-timey?
Like, yeah, old-timey. He dresses period. But I've never thought too much about that, and for some reason, I thought about that. You know, he's notorious for always being natty. And I just thought, well, good, because his whole, like, all of his drawings, all of these things, they are those things. And it's like, why would you be critical of that? Like, it puts him into a state of mind, obviously. It puts him into a place where he's like, he probably understands things about little gestures about people's movements that would be different if you're used to wearing starched collars or, you know, like, I don't know what kind of underwear people wore in the 20s. But, I wonder if he wears underwear from the 20s or 30s or whatever, you know.
Pantaloons.
So he'll understand the nuances of, you know, a wedgie is very different for 1930s. I don't know what. But the point is...
Poor Wimbledon, you know, Green.
Yeah. He understands the wedgie for the times.
Hush, hush, what's the rush? East Coast children do too much. What he whispers, we will shout.
So, tell me about Ninja Turtles.
Oh, God. Okay, I'll tell you about Ninja Turtles. Look what I've got. That's right.
Ninja Turtles animation cell. Wow.
Yeah. That's,
This...
I don't know what it is, and I know that,
I have a story for you later.
Ridiculous. Really?
Yeah.
But, Ninja Turtles was like... I was in love with the Ninja Turtles as a kid, and it never went away. And it wasn't a cartoon. I didn't actually care about the cartoon particularly, but issue 9 was the first issue I bought. It was like my
That's when it really hit its stride.
Yeah, exactly. And my older brother took me. It was the one thing that we like did together as kids, so maybe it's all, you know, brothers of turtles and all that stuff. But I loved it. I don't have a lot intellectual to say about it, though.
You know what? Everyone has the thing. I've got Batman.
Really?
You should see my Batman collection. It's insane.
Really?
It's
like, what do you collect?
I get them all bound.
Really?
So I have probably 200 issues of Batman, 200 issues of Detective, at least. Each bound, I'm slowly going backwards.
Wow, nice.
And hunting down, like, crap condition.
But do you, like, really enjoy it as much as you think you enjoy it?
Probably not.
Okay.
But we all have our obsessions, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, that's what it is with Ninja Turtles. It's like, I think I love it, but then I'll sit down with an issue and just be like, what the fuck? This is so poorly
written.
You'll
get into one of those Simon Bisley style.
God. Yeah. And, you know, yeah, everything after City at War was just not interesting. And most of everything before that wasn't that good, but...
I think what it is it's that it really... It was new concepts in characters.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a very new thing, and I think it's awesome that it happened. And you know, nobody here likes Ninja Turtles, of course, but I think it was really an important thing that somebody came out with a black and white comic and really shook up the what it meant to do comics at that time, so... It's a fun story. Yeah.
Brendan Graham, he was telling me about he was going down to San Diego and he didn't know how he would handle meeting, was it Laird or East, but one of them, uh-huh. Because he's like, that rhinoceros character, I forget the name of the character, he said the name of the character, he's like, all I would do is just tell him how much I love that character.
The rhinoceros character? Or the alligator character?
No, the rhinoceros.
Oh, the actual, guys. Like, Rocksteady or whatever?
Maybe.
From the cartoon?
No, from the actual comic. I forget what kind of character it was. This is a long time
ago.
There's
a Triceraton. I bet
that's
he's
the
Triceraton.
Yeah,
that is
it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he's awesome.
Yeah.
He is awesome. You know what? That's right. There are some good characters. Because he is fucking great. The psychotic, like, he's dying of oxygen, like...
Poisoning.
Because he's from another dimension. There's an unfortunate interdimensional thing that went on. But yeah, no, he's a great character because he's, like, dying of oxygen intake, basically, and he's hallucinating, and he's, like, yeah, he's psychotic. And oh, God, I forgot about him. he's in the peak books. For me, what is it, 11, 12, 13, I think? Wait, no, that's not right. 19, 20, 21, I think. Anyway, there's Return to New York. Comics are just awesome. Those to me are like, those three issues are what Ninja Turtles is all about. And if anyone wants to know why I like Ninja Turtles, those are the three.
19, 20, 21.
I believe that's it, yeah. The Return to New York. Like,
I seem to remember
that's that. When they got depth, when the characters like were really interacting with each other and like had substance. And then they just didn't care anymore and they let everybody start doing the comic. So
now that you're done with Beast 2, are you just going to focus on the old, just making the books and not necessarily organizing the books? Or are you afraid the bug will bite you again?
Oh, I don't know. I plan to become full dad. I don't know. I've got the daughter now, and so time is going to be hard for a little while, but, you know, I do a lot of freelance work, so I'll be doing that. But, you know, Fantagraphics gives me a lot of room. I mean, the pinup books have been fun for that reason, too. I've done a series of those with Alex Chun.
Is there any particular stuff coming out that you've worked on here that has you excited?
Well, I'm working with Jacques Boireau. I'm not sure how to say his last name, unfortunately. But he's a guy out of Portland who... came to us with this idea for a box, a book of VHS box art called Grindhouse.
Yeah, I saw your guys' solicitation for that.
Yeah, and that was an organic sort of thing where he came with this idea for this, and then I was really excited by that idea and was like, these have to be 3D. They have to be presented 3D. They've got to be, you know, like the actual box is on the stark white page and all this, and then the back of the box art on the other facing page. And like, I mean, I was really excited about this, and luckily he was really excited about it. He's like, oh yeah, like, total Richard Avedon thing. And I'm like, yeah, sure, exactly, Richard Avedon thing. And he's like super, super into the like lowbrow
Dice
art side of things. And so these are like all these beat up VHS boxes and, you know, just these crazy bad movies. So that I'm excited about, because that's going to be like a real, like my hands are really going to be in that, and I'm going to be stoked on it. And Paul Buresh is our production guy. He's doing great work getting that all put together right now. So, you know, there's fun stuff like that I'll still be pretty invested in everything I'm mm-hmm. doing. So,
well, there's definitely one thing is it's a difference. Fantagraphics is a different look now. It's not the same. I know. Not to say they looked bad, but they didn't look great.
Yeah. I think there's a level of sophistication that maybe hasn't been there previously because Adam and I both went to design school and are really, really into it.
Well, you've got competition now. It's a thing.
Yeah, like, and that's the other thing. Yeah.
Is like you've got Tom over at Drawing Quarterly just, you know, pounding them out. And
yeah.
You know, all the weird stuff coming out of Picture Box. And Elvin Boydaventura, who's just a madman with the way things should look.
Yeah, I mean, I was just saying this to this. I'm doing a job with Abrams, and was talking to Charlie there, and he was like talking about these other designers he works with, and my mind is like reeling because it's like Paul Sayre and Chip Kidd, and I'm like, oh my god, like I'm realizing how everybody is so into comics right now. It's weird, like, but that all these great designers, the people you mentioned, just being like the in-house people, you know? Because, like, Tom Devlin, he does great stuff over there, and, like, he raised, you know, I think he was a big part of raising the bar more generally.
Yeah. I had someone on a couple weeks ago, a while ago, I can't remember, who just said, like, Tom Devlin's the reason. It was Sammy Harkham.
Oh, yeah.
With him wanting to do things the way he did, because it just pushed it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I don't know. Anyway, it was hard because when I interviewed for this job at Fantagraphics, I don't think they really knew. It took me 6 months to get this job. And I think they just didn't really know. They weren't used to somebody like, I don't, it's a long story, but
yeah.
It definitely seemed like they were ready for a change, towards higher production values. And, you know, Seth did Peanuts and that had proven in particular that really, that model helps, and you know where it'd been doing it for a while.
And one that you really took on was the Hank Ketchum Phineas and Menace collections.
Yeah,
that was kind of your.
Yeah, that was kind of the first big project. But again, you know, like I still have mixed feelings, like because I still think that one's rooted pretty indirectly, but heavily in Seth's Peanuts design. So I was excited with Popeye, actually. Popeye was where I felt like, okay, I'm not doing what, you know, I'm not modeling this after something. And I felt like that was a more pure distillation. That Popeye book feels like the right presentation for Popeye to me. So
this ridiculous, big, powerful.
Yeah, just huge, oversized book and punched right through and just like, just pure bright colors. Everything in that book is 100% or 50% of CMYK, the printing colors. So they're absolutely pure pop.
I
love them. So, yeah.
That's fantastic.
And we have cool projects coming up. And, you know, like I say, Adam's doing a great job on stuff, and Humbug is going to look amazing. Again, Paul Bresch, our production guy, like, I don't know how he even did some of the stuff he did to make that, to retouch that, but it's going to be beautiful.
They use a lot of original art.
Well, some, but the thing is, there's a lot of legal background into that story that's a long story, but, so we didn't have access to all the original art, even though we had the blessing of all the artists.
Or their estates.
Yeah, or their estates.
Even Kurtzman, which surprised me, that was good.
Everybody's down with it, but because of some other problems, we didn't have access to all of the original art. I'm not totally privy to what all that means, but the thing is though, that
it's going to look awesome.
Paul did an amazing job. Like, so it's going to be the original two color presentation and all that. It's going to be dynamite.
Great. Well, thank you for taking the time to sit and yak with me.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
We've got our hour slot here, I think, or more.
Well, I appreciate you coming down and seeing the show.
It's going to be a fun night. I'm looking forward to seeing the madness of Georgetown.
Yeah, it's crazy.
or
I was really enjoying that night.
Yeah, that night was a lot of fun.
More than horses with you.